This is me telling you this. The program is Media Network.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archive.
Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service, where we take you now to downtown Sydney, Australia, where Jonathan Marks and Mike Bird have gathered for a bit of chat about radio, both past, present, and future.
Hello, welcome to our communications magazine, Media Network, and it's glorious sunny weather in Sydney at the moment, 30 degrees centigrade during the day, and it's sweltering in the evening too. In the next half hour, we're going to look at certain aspects of Australian broadcasting in the company of Mike Bird, who's taken the one-hour flight up from Melbourne for a face-to-face meeting as part of our South Pacific safari. Well, last week, we were in New Zealand. It's just a two-and-a-half-hour flight from Auckland to Sydney, so no jet lag, I'm glad to report. It's just amazing to discover a country with so much space. Remember, in Holland, we try to fit about 400 people into a square kilometre. In Australia, the average is just two. In fact, there are two kangaroos for every person. And you can forget the tourist picture of bush battlers pioneering through the hot, dusty, sweeping plains of brown land. Australia is the most urbanised, or perhaps suburbanised, country in the world. Around 80% of the 18.5 million people who live on this continent live in just 10 cities, all of them by the seaside. They cling to the coastline as if waiting for someone to come and pick them up one day. Australia has a long history, dating back more than 55,000 years, when people sailing down from what we now know as Indonesia bumped into an island which could easily swallow up Europe, including Turkey and Scandinavia. It's about the size of the USA, excluding Alaska. It was only about 400 years ago that the first Europeans made their way down here. The first officially documented landing was in March of 1606, when a Dutch ship, the Dafken, made brief contact with the locals in the far north of Queensland and departed rapidly when one of the crewmen was speared to death. It was while the Dutch were doing some mapping work in the south and west that a ship captained by James Cook set off from England in 1768, and the rest is history. From a radio and television point of view, Australia's broadcasting system was initially modelled very much on Britain's BBC. In the 1920s, 2LO was a station in London, and following the British example, a station called 3LO was set up 75 years ago in Melbourne. The style of broadcasting across the whole country was very Reithian, stiff and formal, until just about three decades ago. Listen to this close-down recorded in the 1950s.
Australian Eastern Time is 1:15. This is the ABC transmitting from 3AR Melbourne, regional stations 2CO Riverina, 3GI Gippsland and 3WB Western Victoria, and VLH9, which operates on 9.68 megacycles per second, 30.99 metres, in our Northern Australian service.
Today, a lot of that shortwave's gone away. AM and FM stations burst out of the dial, though at the recent Asia-Pacific Broadcasting Union meeting, hosted by the ABC in Sydney, concern was expressed that digital radio is stalled because there are still no receivers. Australia chose the European Eureka 147 standard, but a heavy Japanese delegation has recently been in Australia hoping to change some influential minds at the last minute, something that's still possible because there's no customer base yet. In the meantime, a number of internet stations are breaking out, and we'll put some links to sites like radiogroove.com.au on the Media Network website. But now let's turn to Mike Bird, who's been following the saga of a commercial broadcaster, John Laws, whose dealings behind the scenes at commercial station 2UE in Sydney have been getting a lot of press attention. To European ears, this guy sounds like a continuous commercial.
The best of John Laws is proudly brought to you by Australia's banks.
The John Laws Show. The week went that way.
Bob from Berkeley has sent me a net note. Dear John, why don't cats shave? Because 8 out of 10 cats prefer whiskers. Sorry about that. I'll do better next time. Hope you do, Bob. New South Wales miners looking for support and encouragement from the federal government have been kicked by freeloading politicians who can't even find time to talk to them, and I think that's outrageous. And do you know why they can't find time to talk? I'll tell you. Because they're all jetting off overseas in first-class seats and staying at five-star hotels.
Well, John Laws has been found out. For many years he's been getting clients for many, many thousands of dollars and advertising their products in a very quiet, can I use the word surreptitious way. He works for radio station 2UE. 2UE is a commercial broadcaster here in Sydney, and they have their own clients. They go out, they get the clients, they advertise their products. But John Laws has been procuring clients like the Bankers Association, the NRMA insurance company, and when issues come up, he will talk about their product, talk about their services. And the problem is, you don't know when he's actually talking about news about the company or the product, or whether he's actually advertising the product.
So these sort of advertorials.
That's right, advertorials. There's no, you know, a little doo-doo, this is an advertorial, because this is radio, whereas on a television screen you get a little banner saying that this is an advertisement. But he's been doing this now for many, many years. And back in June this year, the ABC's Media Watch program, which is a television program which goes out each week, looks at the media, what they're doing, has a go at newspapers if they get it wrong, or television stations. They came up with the Trump card. They had documents that showed that John Laws had a contract for $1.5 million to promote the banks of Australia. Now, up till then, say 6 months before, he had been really slating the banks. The banks are bad news in Australia because they're cutting back out in the bush, less and less branches. You take a branch out of a small town in the bush and the town dies. There's no money. He's been slating the banks for doing all this. And then suddenly he gets this deal with the banks to promote their products. And so he turns it round and says, well, you know, the banks aren't all bad, you know, and we need to talk about the whole story. So it's gone from there. Since the Media Watch program divulged that he had this agreement with the Bankers Association, Alan Jones, who works the early morning shift with him, divulged that he's got agreements with Qantas and Optus. And we believe that John Laws gets in roughly up to about $10 million a year for these advertorials. Now, this breaks all codes of broadcasting. On the other side, you've got the radio station. Did they know what was going on? If they did, why did they let it go on? Because it's part of their license.
Let's look in more general terms about the media situation here. I mean, are you seeing a big influence of the new media, the internet?
Well, the internet has just grabbed Australia in the last 5 years in a very big way. Even I'm on it now, so it's got to be big. I come from a shortwave background. I now look at my computer 3 or 4 times a day, and I'm looking for new technology, I'm looking for new software, I'm looking for new providers. Everyone's talking it. The language is now part of the language of Australia. You can't operate without it.
Has that influenced the traditional broadcasters? I'm thinking, for example, of the ABC and also the SBS.
Yes, they've all gone online. The ABC's got a very big site with links to everywhere, including, I think, yourselves. SBS is a smaller system. Most of the bigger commercial broadcasters have some sort of presence. But commercially, not commercial radio, but general commerce, websites for every company.
But if you just have a free-to-air antenna, what can you pick up?
Well, you can pick up SBS, Multicultural Television, you can pick up ABC Television, and then you've got the commercials of 7, 9 and 10. 7 is owned by Kerry Stokes, 9 is owned by Mr. Packer, and the 10 network is belonging to a Canadian group. 7 is very much a sport orientated. The Packer 9 network is sport and the good life and a lot of American programming, because they just roll their tape machines here and get the American networks. And 10 is now the youth network. It doesn't cater for anybody over 35.
But you get much information about what's happening in the rest of the Pacific. I'm talking about, you know, life in fairly nearby New Zealand and also the Pacific, or is it very much concentrated on Australia itself?
With the commercial channels, it's got to be big. It's got to blow up, or it's got to implode or do something. It's got to be spectacular TV. With the ABC and SBS, if it's newsworthy, we'll hear it. Take the East Timor crisis. ABC and SBS had correspondents in Jakarta and East Timor before everything started. Only when the vote had been taken and the numbers had been published did the commercial networks go in, because they could see blood and guts.
What about SBS, though? I mean, that's a government-funded broadcaster. Will there be a day when they actually switch it off on the grounds that everybody is then fully integrated?
I don't think so. They tried to about 10 years ago, and the ethnic lobby group in Australia was extremely strong, and they said no. Australia is the last great multicultural experiment, and I think Australia has to have a service like that. But we're also getting local TV now, too. In Melbourne, where I live, we have Channel 31, which allows small ethnic groups to put on, sponsor their own programming. And they go around with a little handy cam and do their own program, and it's great for them. It's sort of like local radio.
Some of them are very good. Well, rummaging around in sound archives in Sydney, I discovered one of my favourite recordings of Australian radio. It's from the early 1970s and concerns British comedian and former goon Spike Milligan, who'd been interviewed by the ABC just before the newsreader came in and started reading the news bulletin right next to him. Spike couldn't get out of the studio and so sabotaged the news as follows.
The news in brief. The Prime Minister, Mr. McMahon, arrived back in Australia today after his overseas tour. He told newsmen at Sydney Airport that he could not have had more valuable discussions with both President Nixon and the British Prime Minister, Mr. Heath.
What about Spike Milligan?
But he refused to give details of the discussions before he had spoken in the House.
What about Spike Milligan, then?
Mr. McMahon also refused to comment when asked about criticism of him by two former ministers, Mr. Gorton and Mr. Killen.
And Spike Milligan?
The Prime Minister was met at the airport by his two children
and
members
Milligan.
Of the Cabinet, including the Treasurer, Mr. Snedden, and Spike Milligan. Australia's national international airline Qantas has been awarded a trophy by the British Guild of Air Pilots and Navigators for its safety record.
And 33 crashes.
Qantas is the second Australian airline to win the Cumberbatch trophy. The Australian Post Office is doing good business in the United...
and at that point it went wrong. I am amazed the newsreader lasted out as long as he did. Back to today's radio in Sydney. If you grab a radio and spin the dial, you get sounds like this.
Coming up after the break, we're going to let you know how you can score that limo ride to Frantic Friday, the Eastwood Hotel. This is 99.3 FM.
And now for another 99.3 FM news flash.
Wave FM train and traffic update, thanks to Warrawong, Nissan and Suzuki.
It's 9 to 8 on The Big Breakfast this morning. The birthday calls are coming up next. If you don't delay.
And for departure details, check the Triple J's Y2J webpage.
You're on Triple J. It's about 6 minutes.
Across Australia, you're listening to ABC Radio.
This is AM. I'm Peter Cave. Good morning.
Prime Minister John Howard has criticised violent demonstrations against the World Trade Organization summit in Seattle. During his speech, Mr. Howard said the protest was futile.
That's the news. You're with 3FM.
Thanks, Peter. And there's been an excellent Huntley's Point on Burns Bay Road. North.
You have been listening to the Belarusian language program on SBS Radio Sydney on 97.7 FM. Передачу подрихтовал и провел Вячеслав Вільканович. Дякуємо за увагу. Бувайте здорові.
This is SBS Radio, talking your language, broadcasting in Dutch.
Het volgende programma is in het Nederlands.
Yes, as well as English, you'll find commercial stations in Chinese and that government-funded network that Mike was mentioning called the SBS. Matilda Swift left Holland 19 years ago, married an Australian, and now produces the Dutch language segments for SBS. In the large broadcast complex in northern Sydney, she explained why SBS now broadcasts in more languages than any international broadcaster.
Well, it was an idea so many years ago. I think it's now 25 years ago that SBS Radio came off the ground with the idea that there were, quite suddenly in a way, large groups of people, immigrants coming here who were often quite lost in their in this country, didn't know where to where to go for what, to get all the facilities, all the services that are available. And so it became was very much in the beginning an information station. And then it was sort of agreed to that people need to keep their cultural background as well alive. You know, what's going on back home is of interest to people, you know, to that, compare. And
that's very interesting because, for example, in the Netherlands, they set up a 10-year project to try and integrate the Turkish-speaking communities in the Netherlands. And they said the idea is to integrate. 10 years from now, we won't be needed because the idea is not to broadcast news of what's happening in Turkey, but actually to broadcast news in Turkish of what's happening around them in the Netherlands.
Yes.
And that project's finished. And what you see in the Turkish community is, in fact, they've put up satellite dishes. They're quite happily watching a lot of satellite television from Turkey. And in some cases, they're more isolated now than they are 10 years. They were 10 years ago because that service is no longer available. That's why I'm very interested to find out, as far as SBS is concerned, is there an idea that one day SBS won't be needed, or is that news? Is that news from home important?
You know, in the past, it was you became Australian as quick as possible, integrate as quickly as possible. And now it's people feel that's not enough. You know, people have a cultural background, and to deny that is not a good thing. To celebrate your background is fine. And when you are a confident country, you can do that. When you're worried about people isolating, and it's not isolating. It's not as if we bring Dutch programs here. We very much highlight things happening here, political situations here, looking at other ethnic groups here and see what their difficulties are. So we can understand as a migrant, what is it to be a newly arrived migrant, you know, and it's understood that newly arrived migrants very much stay together, group together, and then slowly go into the society. But still, they don't, you know, you don't suddenly become Australian as a first generation migrant. You'll never be Australian. You'll be Dutch Australian, Lebanese Australian, but you still be Dutch or Lebanese.
You'll laugh at a Dutch joke before you laugh at an English speaking.
Definitely. And I still count in Dutch, funny enough.
But people who emigrated from Europe after the war, maybe they were the Dutch, but also from Eastern Europe as well, who indeed also have their slots on SBS, will there come a time that indeed that particular generation is now either, in some cases, dead or deaf?
Dead or deaf. Well, of course, with the Dutch as well. It's an older group.
Yeah.
And yes, I would say, you know, in 20 years' time, not yet. We have a lot of people in the age group about 40, 45. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I still got a job for a while. But I think in the future, 25 years, 30 years, that will probably be in English with still the cultural side of the Netherlands, maybe.
So people interested in what's going on in Europe and maybe with a Dutch touch, but then in English.
Probably. If you want to know what's going on in Holland, mm-hmm. you won't see anything in Australia in the papers about it, except when we're talking about drugs and euthanasia. You know, you won't know about it. So, and there are still so many developments that are interesting, you know, in the business world where Holland and or the Netherlands play a very important role. And it's so interesting being here, seeing what's happening, how it's dealt with over there, economics as well, you know, with the polder model and things like that. You think, oh, I wish more Australians speak Dutch so I can tell them about what's happening. But at least those that speak Dutch can find out.
SBS. The world is an amazing place.
In terms of the communities, though, I mean, I noticed that, for example, Italian communities, the Greek communities, they very much stick together. Do the Dutch stick together when they go abroad, or do they disappear? Do they assimilate much faster than the rest?
Yeah, they're sort of the good kid in the class, you know, and especially in the 50s. But in the 50s, it was also for the Dutch. I hear stories from older people who were, in the train or in the bus. If they spoke Dutch to each other, they were told, "We're in Australia here. Speak Australian." So they had a little bit of discrimination at that time, you know, not that much because we look like any other Australian. And I see it now still with the older Dutch that sometimes they say, and I want to ask them something, you know, do you still buy something for St. Nicholas, you know, speculaas or something? And they say, oh, no, I'm a true Aussie now. And you look in the basket and they have the chocolate letters. Yeah. You know, they still have it, but they don't. They think it's embarrassing. The younger generation not. They're sort of proud.
Matilda Swift. As well as radio, there's also television. Klaus Hannekam looks after the foreign language news service from SBS and explains they have a different role.
In radio, we are broadcasting to niche markets at all times, to the Dutch or to the French or Germans, Russians, because they are restricted by language. In television, we are basically trying to address the entire nation, and that for that reason, we subtitle all programs that are not in English. So they will carry English subtitles, although I have to add here that my own section, the foreign language news programs from overseas, they are not subtitled simply because it would be too great a task.
I'm sitting in your office at the moment, I see these vast charts of all the feeds coming in from different parts of the world. I mean, if you're a media junkie, it's a media junkie's dream, I would have thought.
That's right. I think in some ways one can say we are better informed about the rest of the world than some people in Europe are because we receive them from the entire globe. So we have news programs from many European countries, from Russia, from Asia, China, Japan and Indonesia, and then, of course, from America. So we, in that sense, span the world and are in tune with the world, despite the fact that we actually geographically are at the end of the world, as some people would say. If you travel the country, you pay with Australian dollars from Perth to Sydney. That's 4,000 kilometres, and the same from south to north. You speak the same language. We don't even have language accents as in many other languages or in Britain. It's the same language, it's the same culture, and that can be boring, if you like. And that is where the migrant population, of course, has changed the colour of this country. It has added many facets. But at the same time, people of Australian background, I include the black Australians, the Aborigines, and white settlers who've been here for a long time, for them, all these new people bring new cultures and they have to learn about them. In Europe, if you go into a hotel, you can watch news services or programs from all over Europe, from Italy, from Scandinavia, wherever. In Australia, that wasn't the case. Now, on SBS at least, you can have all that on one station. You don't even have to change the channel. You only have to watch the time that you get your program. Australia has one big problem, that the national language is English. And the danger there is because we've got two big brothers, and that is the United States of America on the one hand and Great Britain on the other. We don't really have to make programs of our own, and we don't have to learn habits of our own. We can just import them. It would be the McDonald's culture that we could import. And a lot of people are complaining that their children, in fact, recognize quite easily policemen in Los Angeles, but they don't recognize the policeman in the street anymore. We are being overrun by two cultures because they are so dominant. In Holland, of course, it's slightly different because there are few other countries or areas in the world where Dutch is spoken, so the country of the Netherlands is not in danger of being overrun, although, of course, in that case, the country is open enough to be interested in what is happening around the world.
Been watching so much TV, thinner than it should be, like a waterlogged ball, and no one wants to kick around anymore. I miss you like sleep.
Back in Sydney's city centre, I went to the beautiful ABC Radio Centre in Ultimo. Radio Netherlands works closely with one of the networks in the building, which calls itself News Radio.
It's 1:35 UTC, that's 2:35 AM here in Hilversum, Holland. This is Radio Netherlands broadcasting via News Radio in Australia. Coming up now, our current affairs news magazine, Newsline.
Lisa McMillan, Ian Wolfe and Bernadette Skews are senior figures for the ABC's fastest-growing network called ABC News Radio. But with so much already on the dial, what are they adding? Bernadette.
From my point of view, it's adding a worldview that's never been here before. We give wider international coverage than any other outlet. But more than that, we bring events from elsewhere in the world from the point of view of people in those other parts of the world, from broadcasters like Radio Netherlands, like Radio Deutsche Welle, like CNN, BBC, Voice of America, Voice of Israel.
So you're sort of cherry-picking from the world, as it were.
That's a good analogy. We're cherry-picking from the world. We're taking the best of, we're putting events in context, in their own context and in an Australian context, and giving people a comprehensive coverage and allowing them the chance to make up their own mind about events. We're very particular. We give credit to everything we do. Radio Netherlands reports, Deutsche Welle reports. It allows the listener to judge the value of the information they're getting.
Do people care about what's going on in other parts of the world?
People care. I think people like to know. But they care more particularly when the news is something that relates to what we're doing here. The euthanasia debate, which is going on here as well as in Holland and elsewhere. And it's another chance to see how another country, another group of people are attacking a problem that we have. So, yes, I think people do care.
There's so many people from so many parts of the world that live here in Australia. That's one aspect. But also Australians are great travellers, and Australians have travelled everywhere, lived overseas, and I think there's tremendous interest in what's happening everywhere in the world, every single part of the world.
Watching the programme earlier today, I noticed that two things struck me. First of all, there wasn't much paper. In fact, you were reading directly from the screen. Mm. And I also saw at the back of a studio a piece of cloth over the tape recorder. You weren't using a tape recorder.
We're very much integrated with computers and with the internet. We write on the computer, our material is recorded in the computer, we cut it. It's much more an integrated program with the internet. You know, we can be in there, I'll have a story in Worldwide talking about a new site that's opened up on the net for whatever reason. The US president has opened archives or whatever. While I'm reading the story, Russell will be out in the production area putting up the link on our page on our website so that, you know, I can finish the story and look out the window at Russell and raise an eyebrow and yes, he's got the link up and so I can say, okay, go to our site, you can link in through our webpage. Russell's now got it working.
Where can the network be heard?
Well, internationally, of course, it's on the website, which is www.abc.net.au/newsradio. And, of course, across Australia are transmitters in capital cities and in Newcastle.
And so it's on AM and FM?
We're on FM in Darwin and all the other transmitters are AM across Australia.
This is News Radio. News as it happens.
So much for the news. Mike, you follow the present, but do you collect radio paraphernalia?
I don't actually collect radios. I collect a lot of radio books, and I'd love to collect shortwave radios. I've got three at the moment. We have two or three vintage radio shops in Melbourne. One's famous one's called Resurrection Radio, and it's you walk in there and it's Pandora's box. It's wonderful, you know, a room lined with boxes of valves. All that sort of thing. Love it. It reminds me of that wonderful broadcast you did from that museum in South London when you walked up and down the stairs and, what's this? Oh, that's a so-and-so. And so, oh, does it work? Yes, of course it works, yes. And then you'd say, well, what sort of output? Oh, it's 20 watts. That's British watts. I thought that was just fantastic because here we have Australian watts. I don't know if there's any difference. Maybe it slips and slides like the exchange rate.
And that wraps it up for now. I'd like to thank Patrick Travers in Sheffield in the UK and Scott Medlin in Tennessee, USA, for their prompt email reactions to last week's programme. Well, rest assured, we've been collecting lots of other interviews, both in Auckland and here in Sydney, and they will unfold in the coming weeks. In 7 days, Diana Janser will rejoin the show as we originate the programme from Singapore, asking if this shopper's paradise is really still the place to buy electronics. Cheers till then.
Mike Bird and Jonathan Marks were having a bit of chat about radio, past, present, and future. Roadshow management was by Esther van der Plaum.
Time is running out for the planet Earth.
Copyright 1999.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website. where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.